You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You're listening to the Joe Rogan Experience Review.
What a bizarre thing we've created.
Now with your hosts, Adam Thorne and Mark Hampton.
This might either be the worst podcast or the best one of all time.
Hello and welcome to another... Oh, that's loud. Hold on. Let me back up my mic here. Another Joe Rogan Experience Review. We got two really interesting podcast today. We had the Artie Lang discussion, and then we have Pete Dominic, podcast 1376 and 1380. Joined as always with my co-host, host, other host, Mark Hampton. How you
What's
doing,
up,
buddy?
I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, good. Good. Revved up on too much coffee.
Dude, me too.
Right now, I think, yeah.
Took the lady out for breakfast and had a lot of... I'm exhausted. I had to get up early for work, and coffee usually does the trick. But no, I'm actually still sleepy, but can't fall asleep. So, well done, Mark. Ooh. Well done.
Yeah, that's a mess. I had the DMV at fucking 7:30 this morning.
Ew.
Oh, it's always a nightmare. They just... They've created the perfect government nightmare. And
it's a lot of that Jesus, going around, buddy.
So good. Just when you think you have everything in order, you're like, they won't get me this time. I've got everything. They're like, nope.
Nope.
Turned out on one of my bills, my last name, the last two letters are switched. The gas company somehow spelt my name wrong, and they were like, we can't accept this. I said, it's clearly me. It's the same address. The N is switched for the E. I didn't notice. And I'm like, all right, cheers. I'll just go kill myself.
Right. That'll show him.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. That'll show him. That'll show him. All right. Artie Lang. What a legend. Hilarious. Comedian. Been around forever. Love that guy. Mad TV. I do remember him on Mad TV.
Yeah.
And he's been in the news recently. Like, I think everyone knows that picture. Knows.
Oh, dude.
Yeah, sorry. Everyone has seen it.
Mm-hmm.
It's already, I think, during maybe a drug arrest, and
yeah,
you know, his nose is all fucked up, and he looks terrible.
Show that to kids.
yeah, it's crazy how different he looks. It's almost like you almost can't recognize him as the other person. Well, at least in that main picture that's quite famous.
It's unbelievable. What happens there? The cartilage dissolves? I mean, do you know the science behind
Yeah, I think so. I think it's like an infection. When he was talking to Joe, he did talk about a time when he like snorted coke that had glass in it.
Ow!
So, yeah, I'm sure that was a problem.
I'd say so.
That's
a fun medical history to fill out.
Well, it's like, come on, drug dealers. I know you're drug dealers, but putting glass in the drug? Like, surely there's something else you could put in there.
Man.
So you're running out of white stuff to cut coke with? You're just like, I know, glass. We get some glass. That's smart.
Drug dealers just don't have the work ethic they used to have.
They're
just cutting corners.
I'm surprised. I'm disappointed.
It's like, you guys keep doing this. You know, you're going to grow up to just sell more drugs. Okay, never mind. Bad analogy.
Yeah, more drugs. Oh, shit. Okay, good point. Like, I'm disappointed with the moral ethics of coke dealers.
Exactly.
I guess you got to make your own, folks. Make your own drugs.
Breaking Bad taught us anything. It's just make your own drugs. Don't buy them from other people. That was the moral, right? That was the moral.
Yeah, it is. Cut out the middleman, I think, was also the other title to another spinoff.
I think so.
Well, yeah. Anyway, Artie is nine months sober, mm-hmm. right? 9 months. So good for him. And he's a good friend with Joe. Joe's known him a long time. I think so Joe flew out to New York for the UFC and made the effort to go see him and support him, which is awesome. You know, good friend. That's a great thing to do, and it's nice. Joe loves those stories, people kind of turning things around, and 9 months is, you know, it's not forever. I mean, you'd have more faith, I think, if it was longer. People that are in Artie's circle are probably still nervous, you know. I'm sure Artie is too. You got to take that shit one day at a time.
One day, literally.
He's done. Yeah, it's... Which is an important thing to remember, really, for anything. Even if mm-hmm. you're just trying to cut, I don't know, down on your carbs or quit smoking or really even pretty simple things like, shit, I'm going to not play as many video games because I'm wasting my life. Right. You know, if you notice that you have a bad habit, it's the same. It's just one day at a time.
Yep.
You know, like we think that these things just stop, like this desire just forever disappears.
Never goes away.
One day. And it's, yeah, probably, I'm sure with some drug problems, especially, you got to respect that shit. Like, it's going nowhere.
Oh, dude, I mean, close family member of mine relapsed recently and, you know, back in meetings, back in the program, sober, 60 days, 90 days, something like that. And this person said their greatest enemy was their arrogance. They were like, yeah, I was pretty sure. It's like, oh, I beat it. I kicked it. So I didn't need to do meetings anymore. I didn't need to go over the mantras. I didn't even focus on my sobriety. And boom, it just snuck up on him. And all of a sudden, he'd been using for 6 months. And he was like, I have to stop this or I'm going to die.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
There's probably a ton of shame as well with using again.
Oh,
if people
so
thought
much,
you
man.
Were clean.
Although it's like 80% of addicts relapse the first time. A lot of times
is that
right? A lot of times they don't get really serious until after their first relapse. As long as they don't fucking die. I come from a long line of addicts and alcoholics. I know a lot about this shit.
Wow. Yeah, it's... I really don't have any experience, to be honest, with anything other than just a bunch of alcoholics that I've mm-hmm. known, but I've never even known one of them to try and quit.
Yeah.
They just keep being alcoholics. Yep. And mm-hmm. and really none of them that were close to me, it was so bad they were like losing their jobs or, you know...
There's a lot of functional
drinking
alcoholics
themselves to
out
death
there.
Type.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I haven't seen it firsthand, but I've heard stories and I've heard how awful it is, and to be so close to it, it must be heartbreaking because there's not much you can do. I'm sure.
Man, there's zero you can do. Yeah, I mean, the only thing you can do is tell them how you feel about it, and that's it. That's your only power. When, you know, person close to me that relapsed, I was like, look, dude, You're going to die. That's all I said. I was like, you're going to die. It's like, if you don't take this shit seriously and really, like, quit with the bullshit, so you're going to die. I was like, that's it. It's like, you either get better or you die. And I said, and dying isn't the worst thing, man. It's the time it takes to get there. I said, because it's going to be slow and agonizing and miserable. It's going to be torture with periods of getting high in between. But you'll kill yourself. And you'll lose everything. And then you'll die. And that'll be what you've left with the world. And I don't know. That was I don't know if it made a difference one way or the other, but that was me expressing it. Because I feel like sometimes things have to be put in those terms. Not like, well, you're going to get better, or I believe in you, I support you. It was like, these are your options, man. Let's cut through the bullshit. This is what is left. You get better or you die.
Yeah, well, I'm sure some tough love needs to be said, mm-hmm. you know. I think whatever needs to be said... It to be the most efficient way of getting someone to quit is what you say, regardless of what
yeah.
it is. I don't, you know, you'd have to study it all, mm-hmm. and I'm sure the rehab places and the AA meetings and stuff they have, like, they're gonna know better than most people.
Oh, absolutely.
But yeah, whatever it takes, because it's just so hard. I would imagine that it's like, well, who cares how we go about it? As long as we save their life and then 100%. They can reflect on it later.
100%.
He already talked about knowing Mitch Hedberg back in the day. And I one time, you know, and he said it to Joe, which I thought was, it, like, it really stuck with me. He was like, Mitch said, I just can't quit. Like, I'm never going to quit. Mm-hmm. And that it was like that moment already was like, holy shit, like this guy's going to die soon. Like, he just will.
Yeah.
Like, but to be able to say it that honestly and that openly and just, you know, I don't know if he found peace with it or whatever, but he at least knew. I mean, I just can't even imagine. What's the biggest addiction I've had? Probably smoking must be the biggest addiction, because that one's a tough one. And it's, and, you know, to think that it would be completely impossible and totally out of any capacity I had to stop would be pretty terrifying.
Mm-hmm. Well, your brain thinks you need it to survive. I mean, it just does. You'd be like quitting. Mm. Your brain, as far as your brain is concerned, I think it's like it's quitting water. You know what I mean? Or food. It's like, no, I have to have this or I'll die. You'll just want to die.
Yeah, wow. Almost like tricking your brain that, like, oh, I no longer need food. And you're, like, starving hungry. And your body's, like, really struggling. And you're like, actually, food is poison. I can't have it. Mm-hmm. And your brain just doesn't believe it.
Doesn't believe it.
That is, that's weird. That's real weird. Especially, again, to see, I mean, he said that he was, like, either doing heroin or high all the time, even back in the day when he was on Mad TV.
Sure.
Like, or really performing anywhere. And that made me go back and watch some of the Mad TV stuff, just because it was cool. Like, when I'm listening to a podcast and they talk about some old things, YouTube is so easy to just pull some shit up on.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a sketch that they talked about that Rogan was in with Artie on Mad TV. And I'll put a link in the bio for that. Just so you watch it. It's just like a short little like comedy sketch. It's a bit silly. But, you know, just knowing that the chances are he was high as fuck during a lot of the scenes, it mm-hmm. kind of makes a bit more sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, you're like, oh, okay. Yeah, that guy does have a lot of energy.
Yep.
You're like, yeah, that's some cocaine there.
That'll do it. That'll do it.
Yeah.
God, I can't even drink
this
Red
is
Bull.
A kind of forced... This is a kind of forced sobriety for him, too, mm-hmm. From what I could tell. Like, he's been arrested so many times now.
Sure.
That I guess, and they're testing him all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess if he fucks up just one more time, that's
goes to jail.
And he's in New York, I believe.
Yeah.
So they must have pretty strong, like, pretty strict rules out there once you fucked up a bunch.
They do. I mean, I think a lot of places are getting a little more evolved on drug use and things like that, and, you know, terms of, you know, addiction's a disease and it's not simply a choice, but there also comes a time where there have to be ramifications. So it's one of those things, but if you keep using drugs, we're giving you chances, but you did some shit, and if you keep doing it, you're going to jail. Person I love essentially robbed a bank. He was put on probation because it wasn't violent or anything, but it was basically to the tune of, you're going to pay it all back and you're going to undergo drug testing and you're going to be on probation and stuff like that. As long as you pay it back and don't use drugs, you're fine. But if you do, if you fail to pay, make a monthly payment or you use drugs, you're going to jail. That was pretty much how it was.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Well, you probably have to be that strict because, you know, you're already dealing with someone who's, like, willing to rob a bank.
Give them an inch, they'll take a mile.
Exactly. Yeah, it makes sense. It makes sense.
100%.
What I really appreciated through the whole, like, conversation and podcast with Artie, and why I think it's so important for anyone trying to kick a habit or understand addiction, is that it was really funny too. Like, Artie was fucking hilarious. Joe was laughing a ton. I love that. It was fun to listen to. And of course, broken up with crazy stories, but I mean, you know, he's still a very funny comedian.
Right.
You know, with great stories, just talking about the old days, and there was a lot of, like, reminiscing now that he's, like, kind of, you know, I mean, he's, like, sobering. Mm-hmm. And it was great, you know, it was like, it was really fun, but he would just, you know, the point of him being there was talking sobriety,
right.
And that's what Joe wanted to get to the bottom of. And you couldn't help but, like, be reminded again, oh yeah, this isn't just comedy. This is about a thing that fucking kills
real life.
People.
Yeah.
And, well, one of the things that he said that really stuck with me as well is he said, I can't remember who he said this, but they go, in regards to heroin, they can get it out of your body, but they can't get it out of your brain.
It's true.
And that's kind of terrifying.
Yep.
It's like, do you always want to do it again?
Yes, they do. Always.
It's like, it's that they good. Or it's just...
Yeah, it's like, I think I heard this, I don't remember where I heard it, but, and it might not be true, but it kind of sounds like it's true. And it's like the need to do drugs is like when you're in a, when you're an addict, especially when you're on like heroin and like the first 30 days, the need to do drugs, the pull to do drugs is like 1,000 times more powerful than how horny you are as a teenager type of thing. So as much as you, as much as you want to have sex, it's like way worse. Way worse. Can you imagine?
Yeah. Somebody that I know once described heroin to me as, how did they describe it? Just like the best drug ever, hands down. Mm-hmm. Like that was number one. In terms of, obviously it's the worst drug too, but in terms of like what the high is.
Right.
So that's a very scary factor because it's like, you know, it's the greatest comforting feeling, whatever. Mm-hmm. Which in a way is another thing that terrifies me because you're like, oh God, you were going to want that again.
Yep.
But then when you stop, somebody described it as like somebody like tapping you all over your body and being like, excuse me, excuse me, excuse me, like just constantly. And the only thing that can stop that noise is
more heroin.
yeah. Like,
Jesus
whoa.
Christ.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I was stoned too when I heard it. And it's like one of those, like, when you've smoked a joint and somebody tells you that, things just kind of resonate differently. I was like, oh, that's kind of freaking me out, bro. I want to know about that.
Yeah. I'm good. Never been on morphine, never been on anything close to that. So I've never experienced that.
Yeah, I don't think I have either. I don't think I even ever had to take morphine for anything.
But I don't even like opiates.
Some Percocet.
I don't like opiates. I don't like, when I threw my back out, I took one, like a Vicodin or something a couple months ago. And I didn't like it. And it only lasted for like an hour. I was like, I'd have to do this all fucking day to make it worth it.
Huh.
What a waste of money.
Well, you're probably just not trying the right ones.
It's entirely possible.
I'm sure there's...
All right, yeah, fine. I'll try it again.
it's entirely possible.
Yeah, man.
Well, you know, at the end of the day, I mean, geez, best of luck to that dude. Joe did talk about him starting a podcast. I mean, when does Joe not talk about trying to get people to start podcasts? He already definitely should. I mean, all his time on the Howard Stern show.
Exactly.
Hearing how fucking hilarious he is. He could do it from his house. I mean, you know, the dude is just absolutely brilliant. Did you listen to much Howard back in the day when he was on there?
No, because I was in Alabama at the time, and there was absolutely no affiliate that would carry Howard Stern in Alabama. So, like,
is that right?
100%. Alabama, Tennessee, some bumfuck area in those states, and the first I really heard about Howard Stern was like on an Entertainment Tonight or some shit, and then I saw, and I'd never heard a show, and I saw Private Parts, the movie, and I fucking loved it, and I was like, this is fascinating.
Oh, so
but
good.
No, I never, but I, you know, I've never been like a radio, listen to radio or listen to podcast guys, like, it's just not. I listened to some of the LA radio shows when I would drive to work before I worked at home, and like, and then they fired like my favorite guy off K-Rock, and I was like, well, I'm never listening to this again. So, like, I've never been really a big guy to listen to that shit anyway.
Yeah. I guess, where would most people have done that? I mean, just at work, I guess, right? Because he was kind of on in the day.
Right, yeah. Work or commute, I guess.
Just kind of have it running.
Yeah.
Running in the background.
Exactly.
I guess, like, drivers and stuff. Commuting.
Yeah, that would make
sense.
Anything
like that. You could put it on for sure. Uh-huh.
Absolutely.
Legend, though.
Legend.
So massive. I mean, God, did he change...
Changed everything.
The face of everything when it comes to radio. Probably did pave the way in a lot of respects for what podcasts can be today. Just from the attention... Just from the fact that somebody can sit there for 3 hours and talk.
Absolutely.
And people will listen.
Absolutely.
Like, he created that kind of, like, it's almost like hanging out with Howard mm-hmm. Stern because he's on for so long, you know?
Exactly. Absolutely.
And it's weird, too, that he knew that Artie was, like, fucked up most of the time.
Yeah.
Like, because Howard, not that he's, like, straight-laced, but he would do fucked up things on his show, but he was generally, like, pretty held together person.
He was a pretty straight dude for the most part. He really was. I mean, he was just, I mean, he admits as much that most of it was an act. Most of it was just, you know,
yeah.
a crazy thing to make people listen. Because that's what what he knew would set himself apart. But
it all works.
Yeah, absolutely. So,
and what? And you don't need to be the lunatic. Just have the lunatic
exactly
on,
like Artie.
Have Artie on,
like Artie.
Have him on. A bit of a shame, though, in some respects, because and not to like give anyone a hard time, but it's a little, it's like kind of enabling, right? It's almost like, well, hold on, if he starts getting sober now, maybe he won't be as funny.
Yeah. That's people always said this about Aaron Sorkin, the guy that wrote The West Wing, because he was on cocaine. And then I guess when he got sober, the show dipped a little bit in quality. And people were like, put him back on the cocaine. Like,
oh, that's so fucked up.
It's so fucked up. I know. I regret saying it.
Oh, that's great. Was it Stephen King was the same way, right? Didn't he write a bunch of books on coke and doesn't even remember writing them?
Oh, I think you're right. I think you you're right. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And he's just like, I had no idea. I don't know if his quality got better or worse, but I'm sure it changed.
I'm sure it did. Something there. That's probably where he came up with the idea of the space turtle and giant spider for it and stuff like that. Drugs, and more drugs. Well, I mean, I was talking to my buddy who's a staff writer. He said most staff writers in television are just on Adderall like crazy. They're just like, and don't even need it. They're just on it because they got to stay up and they got to work.
Well, yeah. Once you get on it too, I mean, that's basically a type of meth. I mean,
right?
It's not easy to get off it. If you have a pretty decent prescription, meaning like high milligrams, mm-hmm. you know, anywhere around maybe 40 milligrams and above, I mean, you're going to have serious withdrawals for a while. And they don't really, you know, psychiatrists, I mean, I've had Adderall. I had an Adderall prescription when I was in college.
Okay.
There was never a time that you got to go to a psychiatrist, right? And they don't really talk to you about anything. They're just like, how you doing? You're like, great. And Adderall helps. And they're like, okay, here's your prescription.
Of course.
See you next month or whenever. Mm-hmm. And but there's no talk about like, oh, just so you know, if you like abruptly stop this, you're going to feel fucking weird.
Go through a drill.
Maybe get depressed, act out, and you might not even know why. Because, you know, you're not, when you're taking it, you're not really thinking, oh, yeah, I'm on meth all the time. You don't really think that
right.
at all. You're just taking it. You're like, it's a medication. I guess I could just stop.
Sure.
Like, that's kind of strange.
Yeah, but I mean, hell, the difference between illegal drugs and perfectly legal drugs sometimes is just the orange bottle it comes in. You know what I mean? But that's it. It's got your name on it. Oh, I could take heroin anywhere. Now it's got my name on it. It's legal.
Oh, also you can count on it not being cut with glass for the most part.
That's the good thing, you know. You're not sacrificing quality.
It really is. I know. Yeah.
Goddamn glass.
It's not organic.
Ooh,
though.
He can't have surgery on his nose for a while or something. Is that right? Is that what he said?
That's kind of what he was saying. Yeah, because I guess his doctor's worried that they're going to give him pain meds.
Right.
And then fuck that. He's right. You know, he's high again.
Exactly.
I mean, he's obviously going to abuse him because he loves being high. He talks about how much he loves being stoned. And God bless him for being that honest.
No, totally. You know, it's first step.
You got to be honest with that. But I guess not. So he has to wait. He has to have that fucked up nose. I watched a little bit of the video.
Yeah.
Because it was filmed in a different studio in New York, so it looked different. A different setup than Joe's regular studio. So I watched a bit of the video just to kind of like see how he looked. And that nose is a mess. It's definitely a mess. He's going to want to get that fixed.
It looks like
eventually.
It just collapsed in on itself. Like it was a condemned building that came down. It's the best way I can describe it.
Like the main.
It looks like somebody. Well, yeah. I mean, did it just happen naturally? Did somebody punch him or something? Like, and it just like there was no cartilage.
I don't really know. I think that it's just like lots of infection.
Oof.
And it probably just falls to pieces.
Damn.
Yeah, I don't really know, but he has a supportive community.
That's great.
He even talked about it when he was in jail. Like, people are supporting him, Howard fans, you know, from the Stern Show, and just in general. And I think for sure after this podcast with Joe, you know, he's going to be getting a lot of support, and that's great.
It is.
And God, hopefully he sticks at it, because he is. He's too fucking funny. It's awful to keep losing these great comics to drugs, you know? It's just awful. It's awful for anyone. But, you know, I'd rather have the best of these people for as long as possible.
Absolutely.
Of course, selfishly. I want to see his comedy, you know? I'd listen to his podcast if he starts one. I think he's fucking hilarious.
He's always been funny.
Does he have some good stories? Yeah. I mean, it's probably the advantage of this crazy life is now he could go on tour, do like the rehab tour where he just tells like prison stories and drug stories, and they'd be funny fuck. He's done drug stories for a long time.
His new sets are written for the next 20 years. Mm. Some of Richard Pryor's funniest shit was him talking about getting off drugs. Some of the funniest shit I've ever heard. Love it.
He definitely had some of those.
Oh, yeah, he had many of those.
Artie's addictions don't even stop with drugs, though. I mean, the gambling stories he was telling were kind of crazy.
Oof.
And, you know, and then he's high and gambling. And when he said that he thinks he spent somewhere around $3
million
overall on gambling,
oof.
I mean, that's fucking mind-blowing.
That's brutal.
Imagine just living with that and knowing. You're like, oh, my God.
Oh.
$3 million.
$3 million. Good God. Set for life, $3 million. He just loses it.
That's a fuck ton of money.
Yup.
Yeah. Fuck ton of money. Well, before we move on to the Pete Dominic podcast, I did want to do like a bit of a kind of a throwback, I guess. It's a documentary I've been wanting to watch for a long time from a guest for, have you heard of the Free Solo documentary, the rock climbing one?
Yeah, it's on Disney Plus, which I just got. I keep going past that icon. I'm like, oh, what is this? Yeah, Free Solo.
Ooh, Disney Plus shout out.
Our new sponsor. No. As if.
That'd be great. Yeah. I'd do it just for a free Disney Plus account. But so Free Solo, I watched it on the plane come back from Paris, and Alex, the kid in the movie, he's been on Rogan before. He's been on a few times. Like, he's a friend of Rogan's, and Rogan is just obviously, like, it's one of those things where he's just kind of, you know, enamored by, like, the crazy shit that this dude does. Like, how do you do it? Like, this is insane. And he came on after the doc came out or was about to be released, and I've been meaning to watch it for a long time, and I really want to go back and listen to the podcast again just to, after seeing it, to get a feel. But that movie, if you haven't seen it, whether you're into rock climbing or not, is absolutely brilliant. You have to watch
it.
My hands were sweating on the plane.
No shit.
I was straight up, I was anxious watching it. Like, it is absolutely terrifying. I knew the dude survived because he came on Rogan.
Sure.
I knew he didn't die. But I still was like, he's gonna die. I just couldn't believe that he was not
That's
about
how you
to.
Know it's good, it, man.
Actually.
You're like, I know
but
how it
so
ends,
inspiring.
And I'm still terrified.
Yeah, it's so inspiring, though, too, because of how difficult the thing is that he's doing. Right?
Yeah.
And basically, anyone listening that's not sure, a free solo is like when you rock climb and you don't have any ropes. And then you climb really fucking high. And you could be halfway up a fucking cliff face. You got nothing. Like, you can't just get tired or hurt your finger or want to go home. I mean, you've got to finish it. And any little step could end it. And some of the holds and the crevices are so small. And just the way he talks about everything. It's just like, it's really fascinating.
Have you ever...
I recommend to anyone.
Have you ever rock climbed before?
You know, a little bit on those, you know, on a boulder here and there, and those sure. those inside rock climbing walls. It's pretty fun. It's
I can,
it's really difficult.
I can safely say this. So I can safely say this without reservation that if I decided to free solo a rock face, I would not die. And here's why. I would fall off about 2 feet above the ground, maybe sprain my ankle, and I'd be like, yeah, you know, I don't think, because I think that's as far as I would fucking make it.
You're like, I gave I'd be it like, my
that
best
was
it.
That was, let's go make some s'mores now.
Yeah, I'll be by the
exactly.
campfire.
Exactly. Well, you guys die, and I'll be fine.
Yeah. Well, the crazy number of free solo guys that have died is like they, you know, they kept announcing it like throughout the documentary. They weren't dying during it, but they were just showing clips of people, and then like, you know, they're when they were born and when they ended, and it's just like, oh my sure. god, oh my god. But wow, just it's. You know, what I think what we love about those documentaries or any documentary, and ever since they really started showing them on Netflix, is like how it shifts your paradigm in your mind.
Mm-hmm.
Like you watch it and you're like, oh my God, everything is upside down. The Monsanto one, the Zeitgeist one, the fucking sugar ones. I mean, it's almost a lot of them can do that. They really just they're showing you something and then it just goes. This is why this happened, and you had no idea. And it kind of shocked yeah. me, right? And that emotional pull. And this one definitely did it, but in a very different way. It wasn't like, oh, I don't believe it. Just seeing that, like, any human beings do things like this, you're like, what the fuck?
That's nuts.
Like, wow, I'm a coward, and I'm not motivated.
I'm not a coward, but I'm also not an idiot. I know what I can do and what I can't do, but that is definitely something I can't do.
Sounds like something a coward would say.
Touché.
There we go. All right, so Pete Dominic, podcast 1380. Pete's an old friend of Rogan. I'm not too clued up on his stand-up. I think I kind of recognized his voice, so I may have listened to his show before, maybe on accident. He had a serious uh-huh. show. A serious radio, was doing 3 hours a day type of thing, like, you know, long form, like Rogan's
right,
stuff,
yeah.
you know, and it's not uncommon for Joe to do 5 pods in a week. I know he does a few in a day sometimes, so it's, but that's almost like 3 hours a day,
sure.
really, for a week.
Yeah.
And, yeah, he worked for corporate, and for whatever reason, they just recently canned him. I don't think they even from the conversation he had with Joe wasn't even all that clear why just
that
happened.
Sucks, man.
Yeah, I guess Sirius doesn't give you your numbers. They don't tell you how many listeners you have.
Yeah, that's becoming kinda more weird, and more right? prevalent. Well, it's also like Netflix doesn't give numbers to their shows and stuff like that, or release numbers to the public. But it's also a way of like guarding against residuals and stuff like that, knowing your value. Because if you have the most popular Sirius show. You won't even know it. So how could you? You know, it's a
makes
negotiating
sense.
Point. Yeah, it's bullshit.
Saying that, I wonder if there is a way that like some nerd out there could come up with a way to like speculate
oh, there is.
And
there
track
is.
Downloads of Netflix.
100%
and then
there is.
Kind of release that information to people that sell their shows to Netflix, so that they then have at least a little bit of. Negotiating
they do.
Tools.
They do. They're, you know? I mean, there's statistics all because I read them on all the movie sites I go to and stuff like that. Like they'll do.
How do you think they get them? Is it kind of like that Emerson?
I think it's like statistical analysis,
survey
like 538.com type stuff. Like they just pull statistics and things like that, average users, yada yada yada. I haven't gone much into the metrics because I'm like, oh, okay, whatever. Because I just give it a cursory glance and then I move on.
Yeah, but unless they can actually kind of hack into the streaming portion,
right.
it would all have to be survey based. They must
I
be doing
so.
Some sort of
survey. It might be like polling type of polling data, things like that. Who knows?
You know, I used to have. You've heard of Emerson,
uh-huh.
right? They're the yeah. surveys. I used to have that. I was and I think they only release a couple per city for like a year
for
or
sure.
two. And we were for Santa Monica. So think how many people are in Santa Monica,
yeah.
right? A lot of
too
people.
Many.
And they when they take stats for an area, they at least Emerson, they only count those boxes. So I was like one of three
no
people.
Shit.
So I used to find it quite funny to watch like the cupcake show. What was the fucking cupcake show called? Making Cupcakes or Cupcake Master?
Was it like...
It was a stupid show.
Was it, yeah, like on Cooking Channel or something?
I don't know. One of them.
Okay.
It's like Iron Chef, but just for cupcakes. Right. So I used to put it on all the time because I thought, I wonder if this really boosts their numbers.
Oh, interesting.
You know, there's like millions of people in Santa Monica. They're like, my God, millions of people are watching this cupcake show.
Cupcakes are so goddamn popular in a town where gluten is outlawed.
Yeah, I just used to think that shit was funny. And then what? Another thing I would do is like constantly play Rambo. Like we had saved on our DVR different Rambos, and I'd play them and walk off. I would just leave it, and the thing would just remember Rambo. I'm like, let's pump some Rambo numbers. All right,
it's good. The number one show in Santa Monica is Cupcake Battles and Rambo.
Yeah, I forgot that I did that. I mean, it wasn't for any comedy value. The only person it was amusing was me.
That's enough, man.
I never even like talked about people doing it. I just found it funny. I was like, someone somewhere is seeing a spike in a chart and going, holy shit, I think we should, you know, get another Rambo movie in the works.
That's so fucking funny.
I'm not taking credit for it, but I might be like 5% of the last investment.
You're why we've statistics. Got Rambo 4 and 5. Well done.
Who knows? Who knows?
That's amazing.
So yeah, Pete was canned. He's obviously nervous. He sounded nervous. I liked a lot of how Joe was kind of pumping him up.
Yeah.
Anytime that he got in, and that's what Joe does that well, but it really does sound like, you know, there's a lot of those guys out there that like motivate people, they're motivational type people, and a lot of times you find out they're full of shit.
Of course.
With Joe, it really does seem like he has no time for like sitting around and dwelling.
No.
Because Pete will be like, well, I don't know about this, or like we could try this, but I'm not sure about that. And Joe is just like, listen, just do the work. Forget about that. Don't even think about that. Just jump on, start the podcast. You've already got your audience. You know, pull them in and hustle out and don't worry about, you know, one, failure, two, it not working, like any of the things you can't control.
It's true.
I love that thought process, you know, and remember, he's saying it to his friend. Like this seemed like homies. Quite an, like, yeah, it was a personal conversation, you know, this, it really felt almost like overhearing a phone call rather than listening to a podcast. Because it was someone that needed some advice. They needed some help. I don't think that they talked a lot about this stuff before. And Joe was like, fuck yeah, I'll have you on. I'll help you out. Like, we'll do two things. I help you get all the kind of publicity you need to get this thing started. And also, you know, I'll give you advice and pump you up at the same time. I mean, it was a cool dynamic. It was really good.
No, that's really cool. It is really cool. And you remember those articles you see in some op-ed or something? It's like, you know, 10 habits of successful people. And one of them is like, make the bed. And another is like, they get up early and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, yada, yada, yada. All these successful people I've ever met are like Joe. And they're like, just do it. Just go. Just do it. Don't worry about it. Just do it. They don't have time to worry about bullshit. They just go. They just do things.
Yeah.
That's the one common denominator.
That has to be... Right. If it's not your philosophy, you better hope you have people around you, excuse me, that think that way, pushing you to do it. Otherwise, you won't.
True.
And I do find any time that I don't say that to myself immediately, I know that I'm already talking myself out of it.
Yep.
And it's easy to do. It's so easy. I could tell, you know, I could pick five things now that I want to do. And every time I think about doing them or make any move on doing it, I already start coming up with that. Oh, but what if the this? And what happens if they don't let me? Or what happens if I don't get the job? It's like, well, you don't fucking know until you try it. Like, just fucking go. Hammer it out.
Exactly.
That's a nice internal dialogue to have. Yeah. For sure.
But, you know, it's the...
I guess easier said than done, always. Though, right? I mean, well, it's how, you know, they're... if you've just lost your job and you're Pete, it's probably difficult to have that mindset.
100%. I'm not criticizing anyone for having that mindset. I have that I have those two voices going to battle constantly in my head. I'm just saying, I notice in Joe the same characteristics I notice in all the successful people I know. You know what I mean? But that's just, that's a trait, and we all are who we are, type of thing. Joe is mega successful. He's just mega successful. But he's fearless. I mean, I think fear, or at least he comes across as fearless, or he doesn't let fear overtake him. Let's put it that way.
No, careful with that one. That fearless thing is always, that's so annoying. That's like our buddy Garrett. Shout out to Garrett. He just constantly talking about, I'm not into fear. I don't believe in it. I'm like, okay, dumbest thing
right,
I've heard.
You better believe in the antibiotics. It's not really fearless. STD, because you weren't afraid of that chick.
Dear Lord.
Shout out to Garrett.
But shout out to Garrett. But it's that, right? It's like the fear is there. Like, I think Joe is not even, it's not about being fearless. It's about being really fearful in the craziest way. It's like he's constantly reminding himself what fear is, where it is. And the only way to have any control over this thing that we all have to face, which is fear, is to keep facing it. Day in, day out, all the time.
And I think that's what most people...
You know, you go to that show, Stand Up on the Spot, that you and I have been to, and we watch a very difficult thing taking place. Difficult even for stand-ups.
Very.
Like, incredibly difficult. And then we're watching them go from being pretty much... Like, you see it in their eyes. Like, these comedians get up there. Joe usually goes last on that show, and it's a great show. If ever you're in L.A., fucking watch it. Jeremiah Watkins.
Legend.
But he goes up last a lot of times because he's, like, the headliner of it, of course. And, you know, often he says that he smokes some weed before he goes up because it kind of makes you creative. That's helpful. Mm-hmm. But, no, now you're stoned, and you've got to take suggestions from this half the time idiot audience that just shouts out nonsense, because it's kind of difficult to come up with things for them to work on. And there they are. They look nerve. They look scared. Like, you get to see Joe looking scared. And then by the end of it, everyone's laughing. Everyone's having fun. He's having fun. It's all good. But he has to put himself in that position to stay ahead of it. And it's powerful stuff, because oftentimes we're trying to hide from this thing. We're like running away from what our fears are, and they're fucking hell. I'll tell you this: fear can run faster than you can, so it doesn't fucking matter where you go.
Oh, hell yeah! I think going back to the fearlessness, I think when people say they're fearless or people describe someone as fearless, I think it's more like they don't let fear control them. I think that's more of an apt way to put it. They're like, yeah, I'm afraid, but I'm going to do it anyway. I think that's
definitely. Definitely. And I think because of that, even though fearless is a nice expression and it's a great compliment, I think for people that are trying to combat their own fear, I think it's like it almost needs a new saying. You know what I mean? I remember that when I was first trying to get into stand up and thinking about what it takes. I was like, I'm not brave enough for this. And people do it. So they must have a thing that I don't have. And partially that was true. They had better material and lots of practice. But I also was stopping myself because I thought I didn't have that ability to be fearless. I really thought that it was like, oh, you either have this or you don't. Like, this is a thing that I needed to have to be able to do it. And I think that's true about a lot of things that people don't try. They kind of lock themselves up about it because they're like, I can't ever do that because I'm not already funny or already fearless or already brave. And it's like, hold on, there's a practice portion of this. There almost is with everything. Always. Like, there really is. I mean, and that's kind of like a bit of dialogue I'm really glad that I've been able to hear over and over to be like, oh, yep. This is just like that. Just practice. Let's get better. Let's fucking, be awesome at this.
Absolutely.
He, being a political guy, right, Pete jumps into Second Amendment stuff. Uh-huh. And he's not a fan of guns, right?
Yep.
He doesn't like the shootings, the school shootings. I mean, who does, right?
Yeah, I don't think anybody likes them, yeah.
No. But he's talking about, like, banning of the weapons. He's definitely focused on that. You see internationally, like, I'm from England. We don't have mass shootings over there.
Of course
you don't have the guns. And the, really, you're not having them in countries where you don't have it. It's a strange one to talk about because the Second Amendment is so messy. And, I mean, being that it is, like, it's this interpretation.
Well, yeah, right? I mean,
we can have guns.
Yeah.
All the guns, every gun, some. Like, where the fuck do you draw the line? There's so many different types. It's like, what, muskets?
Yeah, right.
Maybe only muskets.
Well, I mean, there's so much debate about it. I tend to lean towards the idea that the Second Amendment was more about states having their own militias. And, yeah, people would store their gear at their home because there weren't bases and shit. So you had to have your muskets in your home and things like that. And it's just become a complete distortion. A friend of mine put it on Twitter the other day, put it really well. He's like, a lot of kids are dying and a lot of people are dying because people have a hobby they don't want to give up. I don't know if it's that simple, but sometimes it feels that simple. Sometimes it's like, why does anybody need an AK-47? Like, you don't need it for hunting. What kind of, like, to quote Jim Jeffries, what kind of enemies do you have that you need an AK-47? Like, what the hell is going on that you, like, you're not going to get rid of all the guns. Nobody's going to, it's just not going to happen. There's just too many in this country. But I definitely think we could have, I think there's a real meeting of the minds, to be perfectly honest, amongst most people in this country, that there is a massive difference between somebody who has a handgun, they keep it in their a safe in their bedroom for safety or whatever, somebody that likes to go to the shooting range, or somebody that goes hunting with a rifle. And there's a massive difference between those people and people that have fucking arsenals because they think the government's coming to take all their shit and they need them to overthrow the government in case the government becomes too tyrannical. Not forget that they have drones and like B-2, B-52 spy planes and B-2 bombers and all that bullshit. As if your AK-47 would make a goddamn dent. But that's one of the frustrating things. The fact that I think most people are in agreement that you don't need those weapons of war, those horrible fucking killing machines. And you just have people that are representatives just won't do anything about it. They just won't. So here we are.
You know, it is interesting, though. And I'd never heard the dialogue before I moved to America because we don't have guns in England, you know, really. And it never made sense to me. Like, it was easy being English just to, like, when you hear about other countries, just be like, oh, well, of course they're doing stupid shit because, you know, we're England.
Right.
And that doesn't make sense. Like, you shouldn't have guns and you shouldn't do this and there should be hell. Like, you only know your way of doing things. And I was 13, so what the fuck, I didn't know anything. Barely know anything now. So I moved to the US and then I remember because I moved to New Mexico, it's pretty pro-gun, even though it's a fairly liberal state for, like, a southern state. You know, you're having real dialogues with people that are, you know, they knew more about shit than me. They were older than me. And I was like, wow, I'm actually hearing different sides of stuff, and this is really interesting. On a debate I thought had already been established. It was like, oh, this is the answer. It's muddier than this. But I remember hearing that it actually would be really fucking difficult for the government to come, to conquer the people in a sense. Like, obviously, like, not a civil war, you know, just like when the government just says, right, we're going to fucking arrest everyone in Texas and, like, or whatever. It's just like, when that was explained to me, that, like, trust me, they've got so many guns, it would be a fucking nightmare. Like, not even the reality that, like, you know, American troops aren't going to turn on their own people, or at least not in mass, and there would be all those issues. But all that aside, just weaponry alone, even though the U.S. government and the military have obviously better weapons and lots of them, it would be a fucking nightmare. So it was interesting because I'm like, holy shit, well, that wouldn't be the case for England. Like, the British army could just walk through towns arresting everyone. What are we going to do, throw rocks at them? There'd be like one farmer that had a shotgun. Now, it's very unlikely this would happen. But to think that in the most powerful military country in the world by far couldn't even take its own people, for whatever that means, was just a fascinating dynamic to me. I'm like, oh, that's pretty interesting.
That's now, certainly an argument.
It's not really
certainly an argument that's being made. I don't necessarily buy it because I think, I mean, one guy with his, you know, even one guy with an AK-47 against a whole platoon is fucked, or a drone, or a sniper that's, you know, two blocks away. No chance. Just no fucking chance. Doesn't have the training, things like that. Okay, if they form their own platoon, their own militia, like you've seen, and they pose a real threat, drone strike, done. Like, it's just to the point where it's like any type of resistance is pretty much going to be snuffed out anyway.
Yeah, but I think it's the idea of like what goes on in Afghanistan. It's like that guerrilla style.
True.
It's just like people are hiding, coming out of the woodwork. Like, you don't even know who to strike. You know, it's not like they could just kill everyone.
I get it. I mean, I get that. I completely.
It's something like that. I don't know the point of the argument.
No,
I don't really take it as this is persuasive for pro gun.
I get the argument in terms of like it's protection against a potential totalitarian government, against an abusive government. Things like that. What you're doing with that is you're trading one security for another. You're trading the potential to fight back against totalitarianism for what is a problem today, which is crazy people get guns, they shouldn't have them, and then they go kill people with them. And more people die in car accidents than like shootings in the United States, but car accidents, you assume a certain level of risk when you leave your house. You assume a certain level of risk when you get in your car and you drive anywhere. We take precautions. We, you know, we do safety tests. We wear seatbelts. We have airbags. Those are things we do. You don't really assume a certain level of risk when you go to fifth grade. So the psychological impact is far greater, because those are sweet little kids for the most part, and they don't deserve to be massacred in their classrooms. You know, sure. Things like that.
Now, okay, so it sounds like your major motivation behind not liking guns in general is the mass
shooting. Yeah, is to prevent all the gun murders and suicides.
Right.
You know, but people have suicidal thoughts. If they have a gun with them, boom, you can do it. It's instant. There's no pump in your stomach. There's no getting you to the hospital if you've cut your wrist. Gun is permanent. It's done. It's over.
Yeah, but that's a messier one, though, because unless you have some facts I don't know about, you're assuming, right, that if you take the guns away, then there will be less suicides.
I'm assuming there'd be less suicides by gun. I'm assuming there'd be less suicides.
Well, of course, there'd be no guns. But I mean, if there's the same amount of suicides, then really what part did the gun play in that? Other than it made it happen,
but it's...
That would be like banning the medication that people are overdosing.
No, but you can pump their stomach.
It's...
I'm just saying, guns are permanent. Bullet wounds are permanent to the head. You know, you can pump a stomach.
All right, what happens if everyone starts hanging themselves? You gonna ban ropes?
Is it an epidemic? If it is, yeah, then maybe we start talking about banning ropes. If people are going to...
No, I'm just saying if it's the same amount of people.
Possibly. Well, right, so no, they, but, okay, if, it's, so but if it's not online. Just but it's not just suicide, but if all of a sudden you have an epidemic of people going into schools and hanging children, and if you have people hanging themselves, and you have people going into banks and using ropes to threaten people to give them the money, or we're going to hang all of you, if it gets to that proportion, then yeah, I think we need to start talking about rope safety. It's not going to get there, because that doesn't pose nearly as huge a threat as guns do. And again, I'm actually not advocating getting rid of all guns. I think there's a huge difference in owning a personal weapon and owning a rifle for hunting versus having weapons of war, which is what most of these people that are committing these atrocities are doing. My philosophy is, if they use it in the movie Predator, we shouldn't have it. There you go. That's it.
That's a good... That I can agree with. A machine gun that has underneath a rocket launcher thing, grenade launcher, that is definitely not needed for any sort of hunting. Deer hunting, I mean, especially.
Jesus.
Right. So here's some stats, right? 2016, 38,658 gun deaths. This is from what the center, the, what is it? The Department of Fuck. Where did
Department
I get this from?
Of fuck.
The Department of Fuck. No, I just wanted to cite where it was from. Oh, the Center of Disease Control. I don't know why they're
doing actually not allowed to do gun studies.
Mm-mm. They're not?
I mean, they're not allowed to.
It says figures from the Center
of
Disease Control.
They probably have stats,
the
but they're
BBC
not actually
website.
Allowed to do. They're forbidden by law for doing
prevention
studies.
Show there were a ton to. Okay, all right. Well, it is what it says. Maybe it's not good, but I just wanted to cite where I'm getting this
no,
from.
No, they can
so
have
I'm
stats,
just, like,
but they can't actually do their own
bullshit.
Studies.
38,000 deaths, 2016. 22,000 suicides, almost 23. 14,000 homicides. 71 died in mass shootings. So, as a percentage, super tiny.
As
but
a
again,
psychological
to your point, exactly. Yeah. How? Yeah, and it sucks, and it's horrendous, and none of those kids should die. And yeah, they all kind of use the same weapons
it's
in those
always
things,
like an
right? They're always like those semi-automatic, yeah. Those need to go because it would take a lot longer if you only had a little handgun.
A lot longer, and be able to or stop a knife, them. Or anything. And not to mention that these people should never have gotten these weapons in the first place. Period. They're lunatics a lot of time. They don't.
22,000 suicides.
Yeah,
though.
Dude.
Jesus, how many suicides do you think they have per year in the United States?
No, I have no idea. No idea.
Man, this podcast really took a turn for the
depressive.
You
know,
if we're not
we're talking,
talking
about real shit,
people getting shot, and yeah, but it's kind of like it is eye opening, and I enjoy these conversations when they're calm.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, it's like if there's two sides and they're just arguing, and they're really holding on to their end. I mean, you just never find that middle ground. You just it's so difficult
to
get.
Again, it goes back to the idea. Yeah. I think there is for the most part, a real middle ground in this country, like substantial. Like I would say in the 80-90%, most people could agree that on the idea of like background checks, most people could agree that you shouldn't have a gun they used in the movie Predator. Like most people can get behind those. And I think there really is a meeting of the minds on that. But I do think you have both sides that are that make the process toxic. And I think you have groups that have vested interests in the status quo, and you can't discount that. It just can't be discounted.
Yeah, I mean Pete had a good breakdown for it. He had a lot of good ideas. That's what I really liked about the podcast. He had great ideas about healthcare and how to restructure that and make it work. And I've been hearing more. I mean, he didn't go in great detail, but I mean, he covered it. He knows some stuff. Like, he's very passionate about it. And he's not a lunatic as well. You know what I mean? Like, is when you hear that someone's either a liberal or Republican and they have their own show, I'm always trying to watch out to, like, see how extreme they are with it. Because I kind of pull away. I don't care what side of the aisle you are on. If you're a little too extreme with either one, the only way to get there is to kind of, like, block out listening to the other side at all, and you know, then you're just repeating your own voice in a sense, and I feel like you lose me on it anyway. Like things need to be somewhat kind of balanced.
I love a good challenge to my beliefs and things like that. I think it keeps people grounded. I like to stay out of the bubble. I don't like to listen to. I don't want to always listen to people that disagree with me. But I want to hear both sides, and I want them challenged. I want to hear that. I want to hear, like, okay, this 2% tax, how is that really going to work? I don't want pie in the sky, hopeful bullshit. I want to get down to the nuts and bolts of how do things work. You know, that's just how I am. It keeps me out of the weeds.
Yeah. It makes sense. It makes sense to do it that way. And I mean, what was also interesting about it, and they did smoke some weed on the show, and then Pete kind of was almost getting a little argumentative with Joe, kind of, or at least really defensive. Sure. It's easy for that to slip in, especially when you're talking about a polarizing issue, because you're almost expecting the person you're talking to be disagreeing.
Exactly.
And it just kind of creeps in, and it was cool that Joe was like able to bring it back right. a little bit and be like, hey, I'm not disagreeing, I'm not fighting with you, we're just talking, like, it's cool. I know he's a bit stoned, but
people get passionate about this
it was
stuff,
good.
They do.
The last thing in their podcast that I really enjoyed is how when Joe is talking about his three different jobs that he does, right? He's got the UFC, he does the comedy, and mm-hmm. then the podcast. And I think he brought that up to Pete because he's like, look, if you can, you're out of Sirius now, so start your podcast, you've still got your comedy. And then he just made that really good point about, like, I have three jobs because I just don't believe that any one of them is going to last.
Mm.
And it's like this diversification of work. And I love that idea. To me, it's like when you hear people working two jobs, you're like, oh, poor thing. They're just like straining themselves. But in a way, it's really cool if you think about, like, all right, most of us work 40 hours a week. Why not split it up with two different things? Like, you have multiple jobs.
Like,
I mean, it probably is. Yeah, exactly. Right. So it probably is mentally really good to know not any one of them can control your life.
It is. Certainly keeps me uninvested in a lot of them, which makes me happier.
Right. And in a way, you could also just walk out,
absolutely.
Too. If someone gives you too much shit, you're like, fuck you. I don't need to put up with this. It's very empowering.
Exactly.
And flipping it around from Pete feeling very vulnerable and out of work to, like, having ideas about being, or, you know, almost like overly empowered. Mm-hmm. I really like that dynamic shift. He seemed just really hopeful by the end of the conversation.
So
I'm a bit of a fan of that guy. I like what he was saying, for sure. Well, that's it,
boys.
That's our reviews for today. Thank you, as always, for listening. Message us on Joe Rogan Experience Review at gmail.com. You follow us on Instagram. All the links are in the bio.
Yeah.
And there'll be some links for we'll put some links up too for the little sketch that Joe did with Artie Lang on Mad TV. It's pretty funny. I'm going to be doing more of those, more of the links. So anything that you see on Joe's podcast, if they talk about a book, if they talk about, you know, because obviously a lot of people are just listening to this, they're not watching the YouTube. You miss those little clips. So I try and put as many up as I can so you can always find them on our page. But that's it, guys. Thanks a lot.
Cheers,
thanks,
brother.
Mark.